This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Vantage Health Plan. Your Talk Louisiana number is 877-217-5757. Send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Bob Mann is with us, the professor who holds the Manship Chair at the Manship School of Mass Communication. As we've noted many times, an aide to many of Louisiana's top politicos through the years, and also a prolific writer, an author of some of the best books about American politics over the last several years, and his latest is Becoming Ronald Reagan, The Rise of a Conservative Icon. It's been more than a year since that book first appeared, but it in many ways is the definitive biography of Ronald Wilson Reagan, and Pulitzer Prize winner Edmund Morris had access to the president, Ronald Reagan, who was the 40th U.S. president, and didn't do a very good job. He couldn't do the same with him that he did with Teddy Roosevelt. But Bob, after many years passed from Reagan's ascension to power to his death, did an exceptional job with his book. But we're here today to talk about LSU. And some of us remember when Ronald Reagan addressed the graduating class in 1990 at Tiger Stadium. Bob, you probably remember that. Only time I remember the ceremony for commencement being at Tiger Stadium, but there was the Gipper in all his glory, and it was only a few years before he announced to the world that he had the early stages of dementia, but he did a fine job on May 18th, 1990 in Death Valley.
Yeah, good morning, Jim. I wasn't there. I think I was still in D.C. at the time, but I do remember it was a big deal.
It was a big deal. And the chancellor at the time, I think it was Bud Davis, he had just replaced Jim Wharton. But no matter who the chancellor of LSU is, and now it's chancellor president, so whether it's Jim Wharton or Bud Davis or Sean O'Keefe or Mike Martin or King Alexander or Tom Galligan, and I may have missed one or two along the way, they're always dabbling in athletics. And is that by necessity, or is it because they really like it? By the way, I didn't mention Mark Emmert, perhaps the most prominent one of them all, who's now president of the NCAA. If Joe Dean, the former athletic director, says they love to hear the roar of the crowd, well, is that the case, or is it a necessity?
Well, I think it's both. I think a lot of these chancellors that I've known over the years have been big fans of athletics and have enjoyed it. And look, there's a lot of spectacle around it, and there's a lot of celebrity around it, which people do enjoy. But it's also, it's just a fact of life. If you're going to be president, if you're going to sign up for the job as a president or a chancellor at a SEC school like LSU, you're signing up for strapping a large, very powerful athletic department to your side and having to accommodate it and its fans and boosters, including a lot of boosters on your board of supervisors.
Well, in Saturday's paper, and I commend Andrea Gallo for doing a fine job covering this story for The Advocate, she got in touch with Mike Martin, the former chancellor, who is not what I would, for lack of a better term, call a jock sniffer, but he did say that the football team is the front porch of the university. And he acknowledged to her, and Mike Martin's a straight shooter, that on three occasions Bobby Jindal called him, and it was all about Les Miles. One, that he was upset, Jindal was, because Miles was upset over sanctions that the football program had self-imposed. And another time, Mike Martin heard from the governor that Bobby Jindal didn't want Joe Oliva as athletic director. And there was another occasion in which Mike Martin called and said, or Bobby Jindal called Mike Martin and said, Les Miles is leaving to go to Michigan. We got to pay him whatever he wants. And he got what he wanted. And I don't know if he was going to Michigan or not, but he used that to hold LSU hostage. And here's the governor of Louisiana intervening. And Bobby Jindal has been quick to pounce on Andrew Cuomo for alleged sexual harassment. But here we had a case in which the coach was allegedly engaging in things much worse than Andrew Cuomo's been accused of, and Bobby Jindal has been silent. What do you make of this?
Well, first of all, I know Mike Martin well. In fact, I'm still in touch with with Mike. And the first time I ever met him, he shared with me, not specifically that stories about Miles, but he talked to me about his frustration with dealing with Miles, who he described as a prima donna. But those revelations in Andrea's story yesterday in The Advocate are disturbing. It's the governor of the state was essentially acting as Les Miles' de facto agent, you know, phoning the chancellor on many occasions, lobbying on behalf of the football coach. We know at least three members of the LSU board at the time who were appointed by Jindal knew about Les Miles' inappropriate behavior with these young women. And it's hard for me to believe that Jindal, as close as he was to Miles, just did not know about this. And yet he kept defending him and advocating for him. I think we really need to know what Bobby Jindal, as governor of the state at the time, knew and when he knew it. These are important, very serious allegations.
I think he was quoted in the story as saying he didn't recall the conversations. And it's hard to question somebody when they say, I don't recall. We heard a lot of that during Watergate, didn't we? I don't recall. I don't recall.
Well, you know, Jim, there were three board members who did know, who admitted they knew about Les Miles. And these were three board members who were very close to Jindal and who also were very aware of Jindal's advocacy for Miles. It's just it defies belief that they would not have warned Jindal about Miles' behavior. It doesn't make any sense that they wouldn't have.
And as far as I know, and I would be stunned to find out otherwise, Bobby Jindal was never accused of any kind of conduct like this. So it's not like he would be somebody who would say, look, this kind of thing happens everywhere, because I don't think it did happen with him or with people close to him in the governor's office. But football seems to be something that that people in high places in Louisiana, sometimes the governor, they turn and look the other way, even when they're doing things they don't agree with.
Right. And, as Andrea's story mentioned yesterday, I'm writing a book about Huey Long and his relationship with LSU in the late 20s and 30s. And, it's a tradition in the state. It didn't start with Bobby Jindal. It didn't start with John Bell Edwards. It didn't start with Evan Edwards. It's been going on for almost 100 years in this state, where LSU football has commanded the attention of the governor and high elected officials in the state. In fact, Huey Long used the football team, made it almost his personal possession for his national and statewide aggrandizement. And so it's nothing new.
Yeah, and Huey, who did get things done, he was ruthless. He even fired the Reveille staff at one point because they were writing things about him he didn't like in his newspaper.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but even more significant is that the expulsion of those seven Reveille reporters was precipitated by a letter to the editor that was printed in the Reveille objecting to Huey Long trying to appoint a football player to the state Senate. So there you have it.
Yeah, well, Huey loved football, and the 2 years after his death, LSU won Southeastern Conference championships, and in some wire services, not wire service, well, there were all kinds of rating services then. Some of them ranked LSU number one in the country, so those were very good teams from Bernie Moore that were not reached to those levels until Paul Dietzel got in high gear in the late 50s, but football is a big part of the culture here, and it pays for all the other sports at LSU. For example, women's gymnastics, considered a highly successful program, loses about $3 million a year. Women's basketball loses about $5 million a year. Without football, those programs could not be sustained, and some people believe that you got to bend the rules. But when you bend the rules, bad things often happen, Bob.
And I think that's why you've seen such a weak and inadequate response to the sexual abuse scandal on this campus, because it would require cracking down on athletics in a way that I don't think that the president or the board or even the governor are capable of doing, certainly not willing to do, because it would be so politically fraught for them. And so athletics is going to decide how it is handled. And I think that implies a loss of institutional control on this campus when the athletic director really has more power and more say about how he's governed than the president or the board.
Is it convenient that King Alexander and Joe Oliva and Les Miles are all gone, or were they the principal part of the problem?
Well, it is convenient because they're the most visible people on the campus at that time. But look, there's still a lot of people, probably 95% of the people who knew and who helped facilitate this problem, if you want to call it a problem, this scandal, are still around this place. And so there's a lot of people who were responsible for this or who looked the other way, who are still on this campus, who are working, who are being not asked very many questions, if any, and certainly not paying any price for their willingness to look the other way or to cover it up. This Hush Blackwell report was extensive, but I think if you listen to King Alexander's testimony the other day in Oregon, we only know.
Okay, we only know part of it. We're back. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We've got Bob Mann for a few more moments, and if you'd like to get in, 877-217-5757. And before we hit the break, Bob was talking about the Hush Blackwell report being just a partial glimpse of what happened during the Alexander Oliva Miles years, and King Alexander barely holding on at Oregon State. And you say he went into areas that were not included in the Hush Blackwell report. I don't want to cut you short. Yep. What did you find compelling about his remarks the other day?
Well, there was just a lot in there. It would take an hour to go through it. There was just a lot that he said that if only half of it were true, there are a lot of questions that need to be asked. I assume that the Women's Caucus in the state legislature, which has probably been the most serious and forceful body looking at all of this, is going to take a hard look at this and demand some answers from people around LSU about this, because I think that King raised some very serious questions. I'm not trying to absolve him at all, but he said a lot that needs to be answered that wasn't dealt with in the Hush Blackwell report. For example, he pointed out, I think fairly, that the whole Miles situation was dealt with by the board 3 months before he arrived. And I think, the implication was he expected on the first day he arrived at LSU to fire the football coach. I think that's probably unreasonable. But I think we need to learn more about what exactly happened in those 3 months before and in the weeks after King got here on the LSU campus. How much did he know? Who knew it? What were those decisions? Why were they made?
Well, and we know that Les Miles had an ally in the governor's office, too.
Right.
And it's hard for a president of a university, especially a newbie who's from another place, to come in and usurp the governor of a state. James and Metairie, you're on Talk Louisiana with Bob Mann. Hi, James.
Hi, Jim. Good morning to your guest. I would recommend to everybody go to Yahoo Sports, an article by Dan Wetzel about 10 days ago with the headline, "Why did LSU allow Les Miles to carry on?" Well, the answer by an unnamed staff member at LSU was, "We're protecting our brand." They let rape and sexual assault and sexual harassment go on in order to keep the football team. You got some of the best athletic facilities in the country at LSU, but a library that's an embarrassment to the country. It seems to me that for many people in Louisiana, Jim, an academic institution, a university, is just an annoying problem in order to have a football team.
All right, but Bob has noted that I think you told me the other day that only one student and not just football players, we're talking the entire student body. Only one student in the last decade at LSU has been expelled for sexual misconduct. Is that what you...
That's what my students discovered when they did an investigation in the spring of 2019. USA Today just last week had a story in which they said that out of 46 students since 2016 who were found responsible for Title IX offenses, it's violent, particularly violence against women. Out of 46, LSU expelled just one, suspended 18, and gave lesser sanctions to 27. So there's just no serious sanction on this campus for sexual misconduct. And the people who are running that office, the people who made those decisions, are still running that office today. They're still there, and they've been not punished at all.
Well, Wednesday, we'll hear from Kevin Cope, the longtime head of the Faculty Senate, and he was furious a few years ago when Teresa Buchanan, a tenured professor, was fired by King Alexander for using profanity in the classroom. That was the stated reason. And at the time, Cope said, well, what about Coach O? Or actually, it was Coach Miles at the time. Coach Miles and Coach Brady and Coach Wade, mm-hmm. are they using profanity in front of young, impressionable students? And they fired a female tenured professor because of this, while this other nonsense, and it's more than nonsense, some of it is criminal, was allegedly going on, and some people at high levels were turning their heads the other way.
Yeah, I think that Teresa Buchanan's case is very important to look at. You know, King thought that what she did was serious and very wrong, and maybe it was, but I don't think it even is in the same stratosphere as what was going on other parts of the campus, and that he and others were and continue to overlook. And so I think that if you're a faculty member who crosses the line, boom, you get fired, you get punished. If you're a coach, we overlook that. We look the other way. You're just boys being boys.
Well, and this was a female faculty member who was fired.
Right.
And the two
right.
people who have been disciplined in the Hush as a result of the Hush Blackwell report, one is a female, Miriam Seeger, for 3 weeks, and the other's an African-American male in Virge Osberry for a month. And you're saying that there are people on campus right now who were complicit in this who have not been singled out. Why not?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question. And I wish the board had shown a little bit of curiosity at the meeting a few weeks ago when the Hush Blackwell report was put before them. But that's the most incurious group of people I've ever seen. They said really nothing about it and didn't ask those questions. So I don't know. I mean, I think the Women's Caucus needs to ask those questions. I'm sure they will, because I think we need to know the answers to that. Why is it just two employees of the athletic department, and not, why are we not looking on the other side of campus and asking those same questions? Why is no one else mm-hmm. being sanctioned in any way?
Some questions from a listener. First one from Stephanie in Goodwood asking about you. I'm saying you, I think she's right, have a college-age daughter. Would you send her to LSU?
Well, she's at LSU.
Okay.
College-age well, son and daughter at LSU. She's a junior at LSU. I worry. But, you know, I also worry about my students, and I worry about what this says to them. You know, there are a lot of students, I think, on this campus who've been abused in ways and would like to come forward and tell their stories, because I think there's still a lot of stories to be told. But now they know that LSU doesn't really take this seriously, that there's not going to be anybody sanctioned for this. There never has been. So, you know, I don't think there's any reason why a student would come forward at this time if she or he had been sexually abused and it hadn't been dealt with properly, because the university says, we're looking forward, quit looking backwards. We're not interested in the past. And that is a shame, and I think it's a continued abuse and betrayal of these young men and women on this campus.
Steve Wenham, the former state budget director in St. Francisville, say we hear a lot about the power of the Board of Supervisors, but almost nothing about the Tiger Athletic Foundation, which heavily subsidizes coaches' salaries. Doesn't that foundation heavily influence coaches' hirings and firings? What about TAF?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And it gives the athletic department has a lot of autonomy, because it can say, well, we don't get state funding. We get all our funding from private sources. And so the university kind of looks the other way, because they're not technically funding the athletic department. It's coming from private sources. And so they get a lot of room to maneuver that I think they should not.
And another listener asks about this not being unique to LSU, saying that if we were to scour the SEC, we would find a lot of disturbing things at other campuses, and that may be the case. We're covering LSU, but is this just an LSU problem?
No. I mean, I think we all know that's exactly right. It's a corrupt system, and LSU is just one part of that system.
One part of that system, and now we're going to see what happens. And the governor of Louisiana, before we go, John Bel Edwards, a few days ago, Bob, defended the actions by interim president Tom Galligan.
I will tell you, when you read the report, you cannot help but conclude that people needed to be fired. But over the passage of time, the people who most obviously needed to be fired are no longer there.
All right. Does the governor have a point?
No, that's just not true. That's just, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He really doesn't know. He's been misled by his board. There are still a lot of people on this campus who are responsible for this, who need to be questioned and called to account. That is just not true, and the governor really ought to educate himself on what's going on this campus.
Some of it, some other names were in USA Today last week, weren't they?
Yeah. And I don't want to name those people. I think they deserve their due process, but the governor really needs to educate himself on what's going on this campus and not listen to his big donors who he appointed to the board who aren't interested in doing anything to deal with this problem. He really needs to learn about what's going on here.
Well, you're a Democrat, and you're criticizing Edwards with the same gusto you did Jindal. I commend you for that. But you're tenured, Bob, but you're going out on a limb just a bit. I like that. But any thoughts about the repercussions for you for criticizing two governors of different parties?
Well, I don't know. I can't really spend my time thinking about that. It's just an outrage what's happening on this campus, and that state leaders are letting it get away. I just thank God for the Women's Caucus, bipartisan Republican and Democratic women in the House.
Okay, we got to roll, but Bob's got to go to class, too. We'll be back. This is